Welcome to Mystery of the Trinity. In this series, Father Benedict Rochelle discusses the beauty, wisdom, and mystery of the Holy Trinity. Here's Father Rochelle.
Hello, I'm Father Benedict Rochelle of the Franciscan Friars of the Renewal, and I want to welcome you to the 10th segment of our series on the Holy Trinity. If you've been with us in these previous segments, you know that we are examining this greatest of Christian mysteries, the greatest mystery, the mystery of God in three persons, one of whom is Christ, who becomes a human being. His name was not Christ before he became a human being. Christ is his title. As a human being, his name was Yeshua of Nazareth, Yeshua ben Yosef. But his eternal name is one that we cannot utter, but for want of a better name, we say the second person of the Trinity, the Word. These are all human expressions, and the reality is utterly beyond them. We were talking in our last segment about the humility of God as it is shown in Jesus Christ. Humility of God seems like almost a contradiction in terms, but it's always there in Christianity. No matter how successful Christianity is, no matter how it may show itself in greatness in any one of the different arms of Christianity and its different experiences, it always, always comes back to the humble. And if you line up the great heroes of any of the different Christian traditions, Catholic, Orthodox, or Protestant, you will find that the great people are people of humility, people who do not take themselves very seriously. And why is this? Why must humility be always a quality of a truly great Christian? Because Christ was humble, that's why. I was reading to you from Isaiah in our last program, the magnificent and almost frightening prophecies of the life of Christ in Isaiah 53. I've been reading all along from the Catholic edition of the Revised Standard Version of the Bible, basically a Protestant translation, but this has got the Catholic books in it and is approved for Catholics. It's a very good scholarly translation. Again, the prophet Isaiah is speaking about this mysterious man, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief, as one from whom men hide their faces, despised and not esteemed. And I'll read on. He was oppressed, he was afflicted, and yet he opened not his mouth, like a lamb that is led to the slaughter, like a sheep that is before shearers is dumb. So he opened not his mouth. By oppression and judgment he was taken away. And as for his generation, who considered that he was cut off out of the land of the living, stricken for the transgressions of my people? And they made his grave with the wicked, and with a rich man in his death, although he had done no violence, and there was no deceit found in his mouth. Now, the prophet goes on to say that he will be triumphant, that he will have victory. I will divide him a portion with the great, and he shall divide the spoil of the strong. Because he has poured out his soul to death and was numbered among transgressors, he bore the sins of many and made intercession for those who had sinned. Now, this prophecy points out to us how Christ is going to save the world. It's an absolutely interesting question that nobody has the final answer to. Why such a terrible, terrible fate was necessary for Christ to save the world? And people sometimes have simplistic answers. Usually, they take these answers only from the Epistle to the Hebrews. And they often say that this is the total biblical answer. As a matter of fact, the theory that they're using is the theory of Saint Anselm, Archbishop of Canterbury, about the beginning of the 11th century, a Benedictine monk. And as one of the theological writers, Dr. Pelican, remarks, that they pay Saint Anselm the greatest compliment. They don't mention that it's his theory. They say that that's the biblical theory. But there are different ways of looking at it, and we see it in the biblical teaching. St. Anselm's theory is that Christ pays the ransom for us. But it's left us with questions like, who gets the ransom? And you have to be careful that you don't end up with a picture of an angry God pacing cruelly up and down before the locked doors of eternity, saying, I won't let anybody in until I have the blood of my son. That's not so good. That's pretty bad. The idea that there is a divine truth and right, that there is an order to the universe, to all that God has made, and that the wickedness of evil, the wickedness of human sin, has violated this order so badly that someone must right it, and the only one who can do that is God himself. In a nutshell, that's the more typical understanding of the mystery of salvation, but it leaves mysteries. There are other sides to it that the fathers of the church, however, that they mention. Here's an interesting one, and this is from St. Augustine. That Christ humiliates himself, allows himself this great humility, because the great sin of humanity is pride. And he cures us of our pride by his humility. St. Augustine doesn't deny the other side, but that's a very, very powerful understanding. There's yet another understanding that is certainly an obvious part of human life, that innocent and good people suffer terribly. And even people who aren't so innocent but who are repentant suffer terribly. And that evil happens all around us, and it happens to the innocent, and it happens to the good. And this is the question of the problem of evil. You see it all over the place. Why? And the different religions of the world have answers to that. None of them are adequate, including the Christian answer, why? But Christianity puts in front of you the picture of Jesus dying on the cross, the humiliated God, the God who endures the problem of evil. And that means that if you are a Christian and you are prayerful, whenever evil happens to you, you should be on your knees in front of the cross. That answer has its origins in the Hebrew Scriptures. There's no question. We just read this to you from Isaiah. And I read that beautiful passage from St. Paul's letter to the Philippians in the second chapter. He emptied himself, taking upon himself the form of a slave, and therefore there is given to him a name above every other name, that at the name of Jesus every knee should bend in the heavens, on the earth, and under the earth, that God brings good out of evil, that he brings salvation out of darkness. Now, we're in deep water. This is the mystery of God, the mystery of the Trinity, the mystery of the cross. And your head must be spinning as I do this. And so I thought, in this conference, I'd take you to something a little bit lighter. Oh, it's not that much lighter. It's a cemetery. The cemetery in the middle of the South Bronx, called Woodlawn Cemetery. It's on the border between the South and the North Bronx. And it's across the street from the convent of Our Lady of Guadalupe, the convent of the Sisters of the Franciscans of the Renewal. And this was a cemetery of very, very high-class people in the past. All sorts of people are buried there, the Kresges, the Woolworths, the Belmonts, all sorts of important people, all sorts of actors and actresses, George M. Cohan, people like that. And there's two tombs that I always look at when I take a walk in the cemetery. It's a beautiful cemetery, big magnificent trees, and in our part of the Bronx, it's a great relief. And there's a tomb of a man named Victor Herbert, a great musician, composer. He wrote Naughty Marietta, No No Nanette. He's very, very popular around the turn of the last century. And there's also three gravestones. It's not a tomb. It's Irving Berlin and his wife and his young son. And I would say a little prayer when I go by, because both of these composers gave us a little insight into salvation. Victor Herbert, I understand, his wife was a Catholic, and she asked him to write a hymn in honor of Christ, a song. Of course, it would have to be disguised. It was in an operetta. And at least I got this information from a very good source, Father Solanus Casey, the venerable servant of God, that holy man of Detroit. And he told us Victor Herbert wrote this popular song 100 years ago in honor of Christ and the Eucharist. Oh, sweet mystery of life, at last I found thee. And at the end of the song, Victor Herbert has the words, and what is the mystery? The mystery is love. Then I walk on to Irving Berlin. Irving Berlin wrote White Christmas and God Bless America. Yes, there's something for you, but you didn't know that. And many other things. I guess his most popular is God Bless America. But he wrote one that I particularly love, called Always. I'll be loving you always. With a love that's true, always. Not for just an hour, not for just a day, not for just a year, but always. Both of these songs touch on the mystery of human life, because we all seek to be loved always. When a young couple gets married, they want it to be always. When people have a little baby, they want to love that baby always. And you know, death intrudes on the best of relationships. In this world, nothing, nothing is always. And if the mystery of life is love, as Victor Herbert said, it's surely very mysterious, because many people experience very little love in their lives. They receive little real love, and they give very little real love. You know, I used to know Mother Teresa very well, and one time I said to her, oh, I notice that the Princess Diana was here to see you a couple weeks ago. Mother, of course, was the last thing in the world from a gossip. And already in the paper, there were stories about how this young lady was having her troubles. Mother Teresa looked at me very sadly. And she said three words, that poor child, that poor child. Who would have thought a princess could be a poor child? They can. Everybody looks for love, some gently, some desperately, some almost hopelessly. And at the center of salvation, and we clergy are not good at presenting this, the heart of this book, the Holy Bible, is about that God is loving us always, always. Sometimes we're so anxious to preach the truth and to get people to behave according to the law of God, that it sounds like we are not preaching love. And maybe because of our own shortcomings and sins, we members of the clergy fail badly to present the love of God. The actual center of the mystery of salvation is that God so loved the world that he gave his only Son, that those who believe in him could be saved. You say, there's a qualification. Yes, but it's an essential and unavoidable qualification. Because love is the only thing that lasts. St. Paul says, prophecies shall cease, tongues shall cease, and prophecies will be taken away, but there will be remaining love or charity. Faith, hope, and love, but the greatest of these is love. Some of the people who are listening to me right now have pursued the love of God as best they could in their own particular tradition and way, hoping and searching, wanting it to be the way of God. And I hope it is the way of God for them. Who am I to say how God should treat anybody? I do know that he treats us all with compassion. And other people are listening to me. They turned on this program because they saw this funny-looking fellow and maybe thought it was about the Middle Ages or something. And they're listening and they're saying, what's this about? More religion, more Bible, more Christianity. And that's because it has not been presented to them well. After all, we clergy are just poor mortal human beings, and we don't do things very well. Everybody knows that. Don't get mad at the clergy for being human. My grandmother used to say that the people get the clergy they deserve. So you're listening and you're wondering, what's it about? And I'm asking you, do you want to be loved? Do you want to find love? In this holy book, and especially in the Gospels, you will find the story of divine love. If you've never read a Gospel, take one and read it quietly. I think the most beautiful and glorious